kick me one of them funky ass beats.
Tune in Thursday, June 18th at 10 p.m. for a special live remote broadcast from What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch. We'll be showcasing the musical and visual artists at this year's festival with interviews, music, and interactions with the producers and participants, exploring what makes this such a uniquely immersive, entertaining, and intimate festival. Again, be sure to tune in at 10 p.m. Thursday, June 18th for our What the Festival broadcast here on KBOO Community Radio. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And it is 10 a.m. on KBOO, Portland. And as you heard, Air Cascadia is off, so let's go right to Between the Lines, featuring headlines from a few recent underreported stories and an interview with the head of the Defending Dissent Foundation about how the USA Freedom Act falls short on reforming NSA Dragnet surveillance. So, and then, of course, you'll want to stay tuned for Locus Focus. But first, Between the Lines.
First, we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
The migrant crisis in Southeast Asia reached a new peak when the Myanmar Navy escorted a boat full of over 700 immigrants to the western state of Rakhine near the border of Bangladesh and the Bay of Bengal. It was feared that the boat's passengers were persecuted Muslim Rohingya people fleeing repression in Myanmar, where the government does not recognize over 1 million Muslim Rohingya as citizens. In recent weeks, the Rohingya have fled in large numbers after authorities along the Thai-Malaysia border launched a crackdown on traffickers when officials discovered mass graves of migrants. Hollywood actor Matt Dillon, who visited Rohingya refugee camps in Myanmar, declared, "This is a humanitarian situation that is caused by human beings' intolerance, fear, and unwillingness to allow other people to coexist." Nobel Prize winner and opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi has remained strangely silent during the ongoing migrant crisis. Currently, over 800,000 Rohingya are trapped in western Myanmar and fearful of more attacks by the majority Buddhist community. British Prime Minister David Cameron has initiated discussions with European officials with the goal of negotiating a weaker relationship with the European Union. Cameron has named a number of Tory hardliners to his negotiating committee. He is talking up the possibility of withdrawing from the European Convention of Human Rights if major concessions are not granted before the UK's 2017 referendum on altering its relationship with the EU. According to the Guardian newspaper, Cameron is backing a proposal by former Justice Minister Chris Grayling to pull out of the European Human Rights Court unless EU negotiators recognize a stronger role for the British judiciary. Cameron and the British Conservative Party want to avoid any binding ruling from the European Court of Human Rights, which would supersede Britain's Supreme Court. Although the Human Rights Convention is not formally part of the European Union, it is an important symbol of European values and despised by Eurosceptics, including backbenchers in Cameron's Conservative Party. Republican presidential hopeful Jeb Bush was the featured speaker at an early June weekend confab of top coal executives and Republican donors at an exclusive retreat in Bristol, Virginia. The hour-long speech, which was off-limits to the press, comes as coal executives and coal state politicians are in a pitched battle with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency over the final rules on carbon pollution. Energy executives and their congressional allies increasingly complain of an orchestrated war on coal. Jeb Bush was invited to the leadership retreat by six top coal executives, including Joe Kraft III of Alliance Resource Partners, Gary Drummond of Drummond Company, and John Evans of Arch Coal. During the 2012 election cycle, the six coal companies contributed over $17 million in campaign donations and lobbying. A large number of coal executives are on the record as climate change deniers, and candidate Jeb Bush is reflecting their views, despite the fact that 97% of the world's scientists disagree. At a recent New Hampshire House party, Bush lectured, quote, "I don't think the science is clear what percentage is man-made and what percentage is natural. For people to say the science is decided upon, that is just really arrogant," the Republican candidate was reported to have said. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Leslie Rudden.
In the congressional debate over reforming the National Security Agency's dragnet surveillance of Americans' phone communications, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's political miscalculations allowed three controversial provisions under Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act to expire on June 1st. However, the law was reinstated the next day when the Senate passed the USA Freedom Act, which the House had approved earlier. President Obama, who supported the bill, signed the USA Freedom Act into law that same day. When the Freedom Act becomes effective in 6 months, the law mandates that telecommunications companies, not the government, will store phone metadata. The legislation also demands increased transparency from the secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which has been criticized as a rubber stamp in approving government access to personal phone data. Under the new law, FISA court judges will be allowed to, but not required, to appoint a friend of the court to argue on behalf of privacy concerns. Demands for reform of the NSA's bulk collection of Americans' communications were bolstered by a May 7th ruling from the Second U.S. Court of Appeals in Manhattan, which found that the program was illegal. Your reporter spoke with Sue Udry, executive director of the Defending Dissent Foundation and acting director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. Here she assesses the strengths and weaknesses of the recently congressionally passed USA Freedom Act and the reforms she says are still necessary to rein in the NSA's still secret surveillance programs.
So the USA Freedom Act said that no longer will the NSA be able to just get every single phone record from Verizon. It's going to have to actually narrow it down a bit and just ask Verizon about certain records that they say have to do with a terror investigation. So it means the records will be, your phone records will be kept with the phone company, which is where they ordinarily are kept, and that the NSA has to identify some reason why they want to get a particular set of records. It is a bit of a restriction. It's not nearly as strong as we want, but there were a lot of other things that advocates were speaking in order to reform not just the NSA's bulk collection, but also the way the FISA court operates and a few other transparency issues.
Sue, given the fact that many civil liberties activists around the country are dissatisfied with what the USA Freedom Act did not feature in the legislation, what is the reform agenda now? What are some of the things that you and your organization and allies will be focused on? I've been reading about Section 702 of the FISA Amendment Act and something called Executive Order 12333.
Right. There are so many different authorities that the intelligence agencies are using to circumvent the Fourth Amendment that we need to look at those two in particular. Section 702 of the FISA Amendments Act is really the NSA is allowed to and supposed to go look around the world outside of U.S. borders and see if there are any threats. And what they're doing is scooping up all sorts of internet communications. And they're allowed to do that. Our Constitution doesn't protect people outside of our borders. But in the process of scooping up all these communications and data on the internet, the NSA is, quote, inadvertently also scooping up the communications and data of U.S. persons. And right now, U.S. intelligence agencies and law enforcement are allowed to query all the data that the NSA collects and get information about U.S. persons. And so what the civil liberties community writ large wants to do is close that back door. It's called the back door because it's kind of a backdoor way for law enforcement to get at data that they don't have a legal right to see. So that's a really big one. You know, actually, what's top on our agenda is to even understand what are all the mass surveillance programs or all the surveillance programs that don't conform to the Fourth Amendment that U.S. intelligence and law enforcement agencies are using. We don't even know. And you know, we keep getting trickles of information coming out. So what we're demanding is a new church committee, that Congress actually stop and take an audit, really, of all the surveillance programs that are going on inside the country so that they can get a handle on what effect this is having on our privacy and our civil liberties.
Sue Eudry, not all that long ago, just before the key portions of the USA Patriot Act were about to expire, the Second Circuit Federal Court ruled that Section 215 in the surveillance we've been talking about was unauthorized, illegal. They did not rule it was unconstitutional, but I think that led many in Congress and around the country to really think hard about the revelations that Edward Snowden made and why he made them. Do you feel the process we've seen unfold, both in terms of public debate and laws passed in Congress, including this USA Freedom Act, is a vindication of Edward Snowden and his decision to release this heretofore secret material?
Well, absolutely. Without Edward Snowden, we would not have had this debate. Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act has sunset every 2 years since it was first passed. And so Congress has had to reauthorize it 7 times already. And every time that they go to reauthorize it, you know, civil liberties groups say, no, we don't know what's going on with this. It's way too broad. You can't reauthorize it. But they go ahead and reauthorize it anyway. And so after the Snowden revelations, well, we knew what we could point to evidence that the law was being abused. And people from across the political spectrum, across the country, weighed in. And we had massive outpouring, especially in the last 2 weeks, of emails and phone calls and letters going into Congress demanding that Section 215 not be just reauthorized. And some groups were calling for USA Freedom as a first step toward reform, and other groups like ours were saying, no, let's just sunset 215 and let's not pass USA Freedom. But nonetheless, it was an actual debate, which hasn't really happened before. So, yes, a huge vindication of Snowden.
That was Sue Eudry, Executive Director of the Defending Dissent Foundation and Acting Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. For more perspectives on reforming NSA surveillance programs, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Attention KABU members and listeners. The KABU Foundation is seeking to fill 4 upcoming vacancies on the Board of Directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KABU website and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kabucommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete forms will not be considered as fulfilling the statement of interest requirement by the KABU bylaws. Packets are due by Saturday, July 11th. The candidate statements submitted as part of the nomination packet will be posted to KABU's website, and candidates will be expected to participate in an interview for broadcast and a Q&A session at the annual meeting. For more information, please contact the nominating committee at kabucommunity@gmail.com.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Chemicals are an integral part of modern life, but sometimes we forget how dangerous they can be. The story of Toms River, New Jersey is a poignant reminder of the risks of mixing chemicals and capitalism. A story journalist Dan Fagan unravels in his Pulitzer Prize-winning Toms River, a story of science and salvation. This morning, Dan joins us to tell the story of a town ravaged by sicknesses tied to chemical pollution. Dan, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thanks. Glad to be with you.
Well, one of the things that really stood out for me, it was a kind of a surprise in a way, was learning that all of the, or many of the pharmaceutical companies that we're so familiar with today actually had their beginnings making very toxic dyes and polluting the communities that they were in. And this is in a sharp contrast to the image we have of pharmaceuticals companies today, which have a very sanitized kind of image. So I wanted to start by talking about the origins of these pharmaceutical companies and the impact that they had on communities like Toms River.
Yeah, that's right. It was somewhat of a surprise to me, too. I knew, of course, that these companies were old and that they had originated predominantly in Europe, with the exception of DuPont and a couple of others. But what I didn't know is how intimately they were linked to coal tar and to dyes made from